Welcome to Elevate Your Event, your favorite podcast for transforming fundraising events. Join us weekly for expert tips and creative ideas to make your next event a standout success.
Join us for part two of our discussion with Monica Pitts of May Create, Jeff Porter, founder and CEO of Hambit, and Stephanie Mason as we continue our discussion about nonprofit websites.
You know, it's interesting, like I just got out of a board meeting before coming to this podcast, and we were talking about the simplicity of making a donation. And we were just talking about it with us, like the simplicity of finding what I need on an event page and the complaint, because, you know, we're just a regional chapter of a very large national organization who is imposing a really onerous donation form. Right. That's just tough. I mean, you know, looking through, and you have to fill it out every time. It's not like it even remembers you. And I threw out this concept, which everybody got excited about, the concept of like a one-click donation. I'm like, we've got to get to like a one-click donation. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I know Stripe supports it. Like, I mean, how do we get that kind of stuff on the form? Do you chat with your clients a lot about, hey, I love your CRM. It's beautiful, but this is ridiculous.
I do not actually. Like, I've actually interviewed a few CRM developer representatives on my podcast just to learn about them because people ask me about them, but I don't regularly review what they're doing in their back office. There are certain ones where I have been so mad at their software that I'm like, I do not like your software. It is evil. And it makes me very frustrated. And then one of them actually, who shall not be named, I was so mad about it that I actually wrote a whole blog post about it because I was like, if there are other people out there dealing with this thing, they need to know. Okay. So then I think that the blog post is aged out now, but for a while,
I was going to say, we're going to look up this blog post and read it. I was going to make sure Hambit's not on here.
I got emails from other developers that were like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for writing this. I was banging my head against a wall like this. You're right. This thing sucks. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. and fortunately, that client has since moved to another system. But if they ask, I'll obviously talk to them about it, but I'm not here to change the way that they do everything. I'm here to make their website work for them, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, so what we've talked about kind of, and this is kind of one of our underlying, you know, like I would say kind of our core purpose, right, is about user experience. It's not like, hey, we can help nonprofits raise more money through like getting people to bid more or, you know, kind of creating great software. Like those are all tools to get there. To us, we believe the key is the user experience. If you mm-hmm. create a user experience that engages people or makes it easy, they will do the things you want them to do. And that goes both ways. It's not just the end user experience of trying to donate on your website or bid in your auction. It's also the back end of these things, right? Which is why, like, for whatever reason, like, We've met, you know, so I wouldn't say a lot, but there's certain nonprofit, you know, donor management systems where you look at the back end of this and you say, really? this is brutal, right?
Yeah.
And so then the front end gets to be brutal. And then for us, it was like, just give me your APIs and we'll just run the donation through Stripe and then just insert it into the, so we don't have to use your form. Right. Mm-hmm. Because your form is like tough to use.
Yeah.
Right.
They end up looking like weird revamps of like spreadsheets.
Yeah.
And you're mm-hmm. like, how did this ever happen? Like, I don't understand. And I actually, so it's not a nonprofit, but it's a veterinary client. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I really like, you guys are super small. You're really busy. I really feel like you should be able to intake your clients and it should automatically go into your system. So I'm looking and I'm like, can I just like log in and see what it looks like? And I log in and I was like, whoa, it's 1992 called. They want their website back.
That's right.
What happened yes. back here? Yeah. Like, whoa. And then I thought to myself, oh my gosh, this is what they have to use every single day. And it kind of reminded me of when I go to the doctor's office and the lady up front only has one monitor. And I'm like, she only has one monitor. How does she do her job? Like, how does she do this?
Right.
So it's just so inefficient. Well,
there's commercial auction software that we compete against that looks very similar to that, where it's like, that looks like the interface that my dentist uses.
Yes.
And I don't know how they type in all those notes on that like Windows 95 looking interface there. But yeah, it definitely gets tough. And I think name of the game, ultimately is going to be, and I think this goes for everything that a nonprofit is using, that they're also asking their employees and their donors to use is, can you make it simple? Right? Can you make it simple? I mean, this also came up the other day, and I saw this from two different nonprofits I'm connected with. They send out newsletters, and you know what they are? They are PDF.
Oh.
Okay. Attached to the email. And I have to read through the PDF, okay? And at the very end of the PDF is a QR code that is so stinking small. And that's my donation link.
I am not surprised. Oh. I also have a nonprofit that sends me newsletters in a PDF. And they actually just started it this year. And in their mind, it's an upgrade.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is not an upgrade. It's an attachment on an email. It's awful.
Right.
Every time that I see the PDF newsletter, I go to that like nonprofit or that client and I'm like, okay, well, first off, why is it a PDF? Like, are you printing it and mailing it?
Right.
This is a great question. And then second off, we can like actually make this thing auto compile from your website and you could put the information into your website and then it would be way easier to use everywhere else and all of your other marketing, and it would be able to be found on Google.
Wow.
And they're like, what? And some of them are okay. And others are like, no. We have a really, really old demographic and this is just how they like to read the newsletter. And I'm like, oh, okay. Okay.
Right.
Then I feel
But what's your response on that newsletter? And so when you ask them that, they probably haven't even thought about that. Like that there should be an ROI on your marketing campaign. And so anyway, we're in this board meeting and they said, and I said, the PDF is great. Like the content is great. The format, not so great. And they said, well, how will we make it better? I said, have her record a video of herself and let's either email or send this out with a link below her. I said, you can do this in Loom if you want. And I said, and you'll be amazed, like with a call to action right in the video. I said, you're going to get more donations. And I said, and then the next stage is don't take them to that donation form that's got 55 questions that I have to fill out every time. Can we go one click here? And but they everybody conceptually agrees, but it's one of the things that people don't think about it that way. They say, these are the tools I have. So, this is what I have to offer. And I would think, between all of us, we would say you don't have to do it that way.
Right. Yeah.
One of the things we learned was, okay, so we build a website called comogives.com. Anybody who wants to, you should go look at it. We're really proud of it. So it is a month-long online giving campaign. So it's a year-end giving campaign for, I want to say it's like over 170 mid-Missouri local nonprofits. So we raised about $2 million on this website in 1 month. And when it first started, it was just everybody had to fill out an email form for every single nonprofit participating to make their donations. And then after 1 year of that, they were like, this does not work. This is not sustainable. So then we like implemented a shopping cart system, which eventually had like a portal for the nonprofits to log into and ways for people to volunteer. And it became like, eventually we got it to where, they were donating the transaction fees. And then we had the one-click donate because people were having to go through the list and click on the nonprofit. And then we were like, no. Now we just got a list, click add to cart. So then people are like, add to cart, all from the same spot. And donations went up, absolutely. And we were just really impressed with how people responded to these extra pieces of technology, because we would come back every year and people would be like, I don't like this. We don't like that. Right. And and so we would be like, all right, well, how do we fix that?
Right.
Is it possible to fix even?
Smart. But yeah. Make it easy,
Less clicks equals more money.
100%.
Yeah.
And an interface that's fun and intuitive makes more money.
Yes.
Right. And thinking to yourself, where should this button go? I mean, we used to do this. I worked, I ran a mobile software development company back in like 2009-10 timeframe, and we were fully owned by a Danish company, and they were big into user interface. And it was fascinating. So we did a project with them, and what they concluded from it was you only need about 7 people to give you the information you need to make a good user interface. Because above that, it's just a law of diminishing returns. You get into too many broad opinions. So we would find 7 people, and we literally would walk them through a series of stages. And then at Hambid, we started doing that. You know, and it was like when we first built our ticketing system, we brought in 7 people, all shapes and sizes and ages and you name it, and just said, here's you got 5 jobs to do. The first one is to register for this event. Next one is to buy this ticket. And you just watch them. And they're standing there and they're staring at it, you know, and you're like, what are you missing? Or what do you think should be there? You can't guide them, right? What do you think should be there? Well, I think the buy ticket button should be right here. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, yeah, I see that. Or you watch how they enter in forms. And we do this at events now too, right? Where you're watching somebody enter in their address and you're like, oh, okay. I see how you're using our address entry form. I wouldn't have done it that way, but like we're gonna have to let our developers know. So a lot of that, you know, looking at your Como Give site, it's awesome, right? I mean, just, you know, being able to do that kind of stuff and then take that user feedback and kind of iterate on it, you know, make it that much better the next go around.
Mm-hmm. And it's what Stephanie said earlier, too. She said, you know, we use our own language all the time. So when we first introduced peer-to-peer, we had interviewed multiple other like Giving Day or Giving Week organizations. And we were like, what's moving the needle for you? They said it's peer-to-peer. And I was like, all right, well, let's figure out how to do this then. And so they all called it peer-to-peer. We asked everybody, what do we even call this? Because we don't know. Like, we didn't know it was called peer-to-peer until somebody else said it. So we started it with peer-to-peer because everybody couldn't think of a better name.
Right.
And then 2 years later, they were like, what if we don't call it? What if we called it, I can't even remember what we decided to call it, something else, okay? So we decided to call it something else. Fundraisers, I think is what we called it. And then no one could find it. And then it was like, no one can find the peer-to-peer fundraisers. And we were like, we renamed them fundraisers. And so it was like, we changed it thinking we would make it better and take away our own terminology, but we had already trained them on the terminology. And then we exploded ourselves.
Like, look, we did the same thing. You know, when we first built out peer-to-peer, I mean, we're an auction company. We built ticketing and registration and everything else. And then I run a fundraiser that, you know, has a peer-to-peer component to it. Mm-hmm. And so, ironically, we, for years, used a platform that we built ourselves that was not Hambid, okay? And it's like, okay, this thing is really dated. It's old. It needs to be upgraded. So we had a partner that was a reseller of Hambid, and they had a peer-to-peer platform. And so, and they're big, big, big company. It's like, we'll just use theirs. Well, that was the worst experience me and my donors ever had. And I'm like, if it's this bad, we're just going to build this ourselves in Hambid, right? And so the following year, we're like, you know, we're doing this in Hambid. And so we did it. We called it peer-to-peer. Thought it was great. I mean, I think the charities all understood it. And then we had some users that were like they'd go to the site and it would say auctions, peer-to-peer, and campaigns. And they would not know the difference between them. And so we're like, I don't know. So we call them fundraisers, right? We're like, oh, if we call them fundraisers on the front end, we should call it fundraisers on the back end. Well, charities don't understand what, like, everything is a fundraiser to them, right? So we're like, okay, we screwed that whole thing up. So now it's peer-to-peer again. We changed it back. But on the front end, we call them peer-to-peer fundraisers so people can see what they are, you know, or donation pages that people get that. You know, but anyway, it's good to get that input, you know, and that user feedback and kind of incorporate it and evolve. And that's the beauty of the web.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you can
make changes. Definitely switched it back to peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
We're like, and back to peer-to-peer it goes.
We did the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the other things I think about are kind of thinking more in the line of events is, you know, maybe you have an event landing page on your website has some information, description or something like that. But then you're taking them to, something like a HandBid or, one of the other ones where there's the event page where they're going to actually buy the tickets, do the, that's where the auction's going to be seeing all the items and really using tools that match. So like, it's not so obvious that your theme is one thing on this page and it's completely different. Like having tools where you can make it seem like a seamless experience.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
Elevated.
And you want that because like all of us have this subconscious ability to know that something's not quite right. Mm-hmm. And that would steer us away from making that decision. And mm-hmm. we want to remove all the barriers of entry, right? And so if that's something you have control over, that would make perfect sense that they would match. And also, I do think it's really important that they have, especially for their annual events, they should have them on their website proper, because then they will actually optimize in Google and people can find them out there.
Yep.
And for an annual event, I would advise people don't make a new page each year. It should be the same page. It should be up all year round. It should not go down. People are like, but what do we do in between? Like right after the event happens, I'm like, just leave it alone because they're going to look at the date and know that it's passed. And then as soon as you know next year's date, just go up and be like next year's like, hold, save the date for next year's date, right? But what can happen if you put up multiple instances of an event is either it A, doesn't have time to optimize, and so people can't find it when they're searching for it, and they might not even associate your organization's name with your event. They just know the event name, and so they're searching for the event by name. Mm-hmm. And then if you have multiple instances of it, then you will end up having multiple instances showing up in Google, and the most recent one is not always the one at the top. And if you're not super detail oriented, you will not actually notice that it's the wrong year. And then you show up with your children to the Toys for Tots concert, and there's no concert because you chose the wrong year. That has never happened to me.
I have been doing check-in at a HandBid event. And it was hilarious. Like it was over here in Lone Tree. And so this people came up and we couldn't find them on the guest list. And we were trying and trying and trying. And finally, I'm like, what event are you going to? And so they tell us, okay. And it's not a HandBid event. I mean, so we Google it online. And last year that event was at this venue.
No.
And this year the event was like 20 or 30 minutes away at another spot. Same night. Right? Same date, at least, mm-hmm. It was hilarious. I was like, I'm really sorry, but this event was here last year. She's like, well, I looked it up on their website. And so we went to the website and sure enough, they had not updated the date and location of the event.
Oh no.
So
people do it all the time. Yeah. And it like people drive sometimes 30 minutes to an hour or longer to get to your event. Children, their whole week is like crafted around the excitement of going to this thing. And then they show up. It's not then.
Right, exactly.
It's really crappy. And all you have to do is just, if you have an annual event, just have a page for that annual event that is always that page on your website forever. And if you rebuild your website and you change the URL for it, you just need to have a redirect over to the new page. That's all you have to do. It's not complicated. It's very straightforward. And you can make people happy.
We can wrap up this podcast with a list of don'ts. And so let's give our audience a list of the things not to do. And it sounds like the first one on the list is do not leave last year's event information up on your website.
Yes, update the information.
So what else would you put on your don't list? Give us 3 to 4 don'ts that you typically would tell your nonprofits.
Don't hide your donate button. A lot of people like to nestle it under get involved because I don't know why they do it.
It is your cash register button. It should be up in the front. Yep.
I want it like up at the top. I want it on the top, like quarter of your website. I want to see a donate button. I want it to look different than the other navigation. I want it to be loud and I want it to like hit me in the face. So don't hide your donate button. Also, don't hide your contact information. Like, I don't understand why people do this. It should be at the bottom of your website. You should have a contact page listed on the navigation. Remember, because a lot of our donors are going to be people who weren't born with the internet. So they are used to having a contact like link up in the navigation that they can click on and find your information, make sure there's a phone number there. I know it sounds like this stuff is really like logical, but not everybody does it, right? Make sure there's actually an email address. Nobody's going to steal it from you. You're not going to get like monstrous amounts of spam. Have an actual email address that people can click on and send an email from whatever platform they want to. So don't hide your contact button. I would say also, don't just have a bulleted list of your services, because that's not going to optimize in Google. People aren't going to find you that way. So we actually have to have words on our website that we want people to find us for. And usually that involves having a page for each one of the things that you do. When you talk about it and talk about it a lot, talk about it from your visitor's perspective and think about what they need to know and realize they don't know everything. And a bulleted list will not suffice. The only website that can get away with not giving enough information is Google. And it's because they make the rules. And so they get to break them.
Yes. Fair enough.
Because we've all been to the Google form where you're like, I need steps 7 through 14 that I am clearly missing.
Right.
To get this thing done. And they just don't have them. Like, you should know them. So don't do that. So those would be probably my three biggest don't for anyone. Oh, wait, I have one more.
All right.
One more.
A bonus don't, you guys. Here comes.
Don't use stock photos that don't make sense. Don't use stock photos at all. Like, I hate it. Oh, it makes me so mad. Because here's the deal. I don't care if your photos are slightly blurry or grainy or if they're not lit right. Because if that's where you are as an organization, that's okay. I'm seeing you as exactly what you are. Be proud of that and show actual pictures of you so people can get to know you and meet you. Those weird glowing humans are just weird glowing humans and they're not part of your organization and that's not what you are.
Let's be honest, you're just not as good looking as them, right?
Fine.
Speak for yourself. Yeah.
Come on, nonprofit. You're not that pretty. I'm just kidding. No, I agree with you. You have to look at what's real, right? I mean, you've got to look at what's real.
Well, and it's a relationship. It's a relationship. Yeah. So, you know, I don't want to have a relationship with a stock photo. I want to have a relationship with the real people doing the work or the people being, see the people being impacted by the work or whatever the case may be.
So you don't show up at their event and go, you don't look like the lady on the website.
Well, it's just, it can give across the wrong image entirely because like I went to a website the other day that was, I can't even remember what it was about. It was a nonprofit site. And I thought it was going to be about like stream cleanup or water preservation because it was this big river with trees around it and people like kayaking down the river and it's a video. And that's not what they did like at all. So I was very confused. And so I actually wrote them and I was like, this does not make sense.
Right.
We should change this. It's a pretty video, but it doesn't match.
I agree. Yeah, we learned a lot of that. We went through Donald Miller's story brand exercise and we learned a lot of that, like how you kind of connect who you are to exactly what people see when they arrive at your website. And it makes a lot of sense for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, the other don't I would add, and Stephanie, you can add your don'ts after that. I'll add one more, which is don't hang on to old logos or brands if it's really time to kind of rethink them. I just, for whatever reason, there's emotional attachments to brands and you see every organization out there, for-profit, nonprofit, their brand evolves over time and you got to be open to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me see. What would my don't be? My don't would be, I like, you know, going back to the beginning of the podcast. Don't fall for the idea that, or the sales pitch that changing your website is going to solve deeper issues in the organization. So I think, you know, websites are very powerful. They're amazing tools, but sometimes they are not the solution to every problem.
Yeah. Look, you have a 1995 Honda Civic and it's about to fall apart and you put a new coat of paint on it. It's still about to fall apart.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I have a question for you, Jeff.
Yeah.
So you were talking about like the brand and the evolution. So one of the things that I've seen nonprofits really struggle with is they didn't name themselves or brand themselves appropriately the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just flip it like completely, something completely different. And some of them literally fold because no one can figure out that this is who they are now. So when you talk about that with people, if you do you have any advice? Like, so you named yourself the wrong thing. Now what?
Oh my God. You just brought up, this just came up. I mean, we have a client that's they're closing their doors. And for the longest time, they were named something and their name made no sense for what they did. And they changed their name to be a little bit more aligned with what they do. And that lasted, what do you want to say, guys? 4 months? Mm-hmm. I mean, people just lost it. And I think it's okay to, I mean, they know you're by your name and your name doesn't always have to say exactly what it is that you do. But you've built a brand for years, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years, and stick with it. You know, unless it's so inappropriate or just completely, you know, off target, if it's just something that's a name that's still a good name, but it doesn't really match what you do, there's a lot of risk in changing it. And for this organization, they probably would tell you that. I mean, it was shocking how quickly they decided to kind of close it down, but you know, that's a tough one.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. I think if you're to a certain point where you have a donor base that's sustaining you and growing, then yeah, I probably wouldn't advise changing your name. Maybe, you know, you can, I don't know, minimize it in a different way. But yeah, if that donor base is there and they're supporting you and they know who you are, then I think it's okay. Because that, to Jeff's point, that's a huge risk, you know, maybe if you're super early on.
Well, this happened. I mean, like we've had this internal conversation. We can throw some of our laundry out there. I mean, HandBid was built in the name was, I came up with the name in 2010, right? And we launched the company in 2011 and we were doing mobile bidding and auctions. And then we've expanded beyond that, you know, and we do fundraising and we do peer-to-peer and we do, you know, donation campaigns and text to give and you name it, all for nonprofits. And all of our competitors at some point decided, not all, but I say a vast majority of them said, well, because we do all those other things too, we're going to just rebrand ourselves as like giving this or, you know, causes or whatever. I mean, they just kind of went generic with it. And I understand why they did, but we've established such a brand that does it seem weird that HandBid would be running your peer-to-peer? I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. I mean, the clients who use us, who understand it, they don't care. And the people who come to the site, all they want is an easy user experience, right? They're not, I mean, possibly digging down to the bottom of the page to see who powered this page necessarily. So I think massive name changes like that can be risky. They really can.
Yeah. And brand recognition is valuable,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so and trade-off. Your brand is more than your name and it's more than your logo. And
right.
So you can change the way that you explain things or change the colors that you use or the imagery that you use, change your messaging altogether. I did some consulting with an organization that does so many things. And I was like, okay, so we're going to have to organize this
right.
Somehow so people can wrap their mind around it. And then we're going to start a campaign where we're going to educate from within about all the things that you do, because that's where we need to start. And it was just like a confusing thing because they could have been, you know, nobody knew. They're so layered
yeah.
in.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, that's more dangerous than the name, yes. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've had lots of these conversations on various boards I've been on through the years where it's like, let's talk about our core focus. Let's talk about what it is that we do and what it is that we don't do, and how do we want to prioritize our resources, because that's more important than what we call ourselves, honestly, right?
Well, because, and at Hambid, do people come in, do most of your new clients come in because they're looking for an online auction solution, or are they coming in from other streams?
Well, I mean, I would say the vast majority of our traffic coming in is around auctions, okay? Charity auctions, fundraisers, auction software, commercial auction software, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. That's what people see us as. And then when they walk in the door and they see us, they say, oh, they do these other things, right?
Yeah. And I think a nonprofit could do the same thing.
Yep. And, you know, we did this at FPWR. When we started the Foundation for Prader Willi Research, what are we? We are a research organization. What do we focus on? We focus on, you know, supplying research grants. Can we do a lot of other things? Can we have support groups in different cities? Sure, right? Can we do advocacy on Capitol Hill? Sure, right? But are we going to change our name so it reflects all those things? Nope, right? And the main reason why people find us is this main reason, and then these other things are things that they can learn about us. It makes more sense. Because, look, we're not Google. None of our charity clients have that kind of branding power, right, or even that online presence. And so in that case, what you have to do is you have to just tell people. You have to say, hey, look, get them in the door with what it is they're primarily looking for, and then show them all the other things they can do.
Yeah. We're on the same page, because I definitely feel the same way. When people just up and change their brand and they call us and they're like, hey, we just changed our name and everything, and here's our logo, and we're going to cater to a new demographic. And I'm like, holy cow, we might have a huge problem.
Yes.
And I don't know how to tell you this,
right.
But I'll help you with awesome. That website though.
Yep. That's awesome. Well, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. I think my kids are coming home from school. Your kids are coming home from school. Yep. We're all going to turn, like, witching hour is approached. So anyway, thank you so much, Monica. We really appreciate you being on the podcast today. And thank you guys for listening. We might have to turn this into a two-parter. We'll have to see. It's been such a great conversation. But best of luck with your branding. Best of luck, everybody, with your website. If you guys have any needs related to website and you have questions, we'll make sure that you have Monica's contact information. You guys should give them a shout. They'd be happy to help you, I'm sure. And then for your next fundraising event, obviously, we want you to use Hambid. You know, obviously, we'd love for you to consider, you know, a simple, easy to use, awesome, fun experience. Great designed web pages as it pertains to the event. So go check that out as well. And until next time, happy fundraising.
Thanks for joining us on this compelling journey to uncover the game-changing strategies behind nonprofit websites. A special thank you to Monica Pitts, the creative mind behind May Create. We hope you've gained valuable insights and actionable tips that will help you take your nonprofit website to the next level. If you enjoyed our show, please take a moment to leave us a review. You can find us on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Don't forget to subscribe for more great content. And if you're a fan of video, check us out on YouTube. Until next time, happy fundraising.